Welcome to Digging Up Ag Podcast. Through sharing research-based information from the University of Kentucky, our goal is to help you successfully enrich your farming enterprise while cultivating knowledge and expertise in agriculture. Now, here's your host.
Welcome, everyone, to Digging Up Ag Podcast. I am Adam Huber, the Agriculture and Natural Resources Extension Agent in Allen County, Kentucky, and I am joined by Mr. Adam Estes in Hart County and Kevin Lines in Monroe County, both ag agents in those respective counties. Guys, how are y'all doing this morning?
Good morning, Adam. Doing great. How are you?
I'm finer than a frog here.
Oh, that's pretty good.
Split three ways.
I'm doing well.
That's right. Yeah. That's right. You can't even finer than that, can you?
I like somebody with a positive response, because most of the time you ask somebody how they're doing, they'll tell you.
Right. That's exactly right.
Yeah. Yeah. You soon learn who to ask about how they're doing, because you might get their whole medical history.
True.
Right. I'm just
glad that it's starting to get warm outside.
Yes, sir. Things are looking up. Spring's here officially, and we're on our way to good times, hopefully, again.
Was yesterday the first day of spring?
I think it was last night.
Yep. About, the 19th.
10:30 or so.
Yep. Of course, it was, of course, I guess technically it was still winter yesterday, so, and it felt like it.
Yeah.
It was pretty cold. It was cold. Yeah. Yesterday and the day before was pretty cold. Actually, we've got some fruit tree growers here in Allen County, and one of my producers, Wednesday. I guess it was Monday or Tuesday night. I can't remember exactly. I get my days mixed up. But they've got several hundred trees, and he actually built fires in big 55-gallon like trash cans, the metal ones or barrels, to try to save the peach crop for. You know, because that hard freeze, it was like, I think it was, got down to 20-something. So he was 24. Trying to, yeah. So they were trying to, you know, get some warmth in the orchard to hopefully save some of the peaches at this time.
Yeah, when your livelihood is dependent on that, it's a tough one to deal with, those late freezes. So it seems like we get a decent peach crop, about once every 3 years, maybe once every 4 years, but some of those guys that are equipped to do it know how to do it well, or different from the guys like me that's got one peach tree, but they were battling it.
But they had a bunch of barrels around the orchard. They were trying to keep some, you know, some heat in, and I think that I believe last year they didn't have a crop because they had a big freeze in the middle of April last year that killed off a bunch of the peach crop, or most of it actually, here in our part of the state. And so that's kind of what they were trying to prevent this year. And I believe they've had really like one or two good crops from their orchard. They've had them established for probably 4 or 5 years, I guess. But that just shows, you know, the weather here. It can be really good at times for certain things, but, you know, in my opinion, for fruit tree production, it's kind of hit and miss, you know, because of in the middle of April, you know, it could be, you know, we get down into the teens and, you know, overnight and have those hard freezes. So it's just really hard to do that with, you know, with the fruit trees here.
We're kind of on that northern edge, aren't we?
We're in that they call it the transition zone. So you don't know, you know, kind of from year to year, or from, you know, month to month, day to day, what it's going to be. And that just makes it kind of hard, you know, for those fruit tree growers, I think.
Yeah. I think the apples are a little bit harder to knock back and kill, but seem like the peaches are pretty easy to knock back. So definitely feel for those folks that are dealing with some of that, because it's not easy to do that.
Yeah, they go ahead.
I'll go ahead. I was going to switch gears there. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, I know we've got two peach tree growers. Well, one of them has just peach trees, one of them has peaches and apples. And we've got some, and those are like our two main ones. We do have some other ones as well, but they're kind of the two lead, you know, lead ones in the county. But I know one of them, it was like 2.5 weeks ago, just put a picture out that their peach trees were, I mean, had big full blooms on them. And that was 2 weeks ago. And so, you know, that's, and that was early then, you know, for them to be bloomed out so much. So, you know, it just, like Kevin said, you know, I kind of feel bad for those folks that are, you know, they get excited about the peach crop coming on, but then again, you know, the weather says, hold on just a minute.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, Mother Nature says back to reality.
Right.
What's the little motto? Well, we make plans and God laughs. So
yeah. Sometimes, that's
right. Sometimes it just doesn't go according to the plan, but it definitely hurts when all that happens to those folks.
Mm-hmm. On a similar note, I know we got a message from Dr. Carrie Knott about the cold weather on effect on wheat crop. And basically, y'all correct me if I'm wrong here, but my understanding is if it's at feet six, which is joining or later, then that's where the risk is at. It needs to be, if the temperatures get 24 degrees for at least 2 hours or longer, then that's, you know, you've got potential damage there.
Yep.
Yep. Seen several different things over the years with that, and it can be in one field, and some of it's just the elevation or the proximity to the creek, it was the weirdest thing just a few years ago. You could see it in a field right down, like you drew a line through it. One side was fine and one wasn't, and it's just 1 or 2 degrees difference will usually tell the tale. But we'll know more in about a week and see what it looks like. It'll take a little time to see what the damage is, so
it'll show up.
It'll take a little time for that, so a week to 10 days we'll see what we've got. Yep, that's a good point.
It's amazing to me how much stuff is greened up already. I mean, I've been talking to several producers here in the county in the last few days that's starting to see some weevil damage show up on alfalfa.
Really?
Now,
Monday night probably took care of some of that.
Yeah, I'd say they're probably slowed down right now.
It may have took care of some of the alfalfa. I saw that too. I still call it the Easter freeze. It pretty much wiped out the first cutting. It's going to be ready to go in just a few days. And it just, it's
what
been
was
several
that?
Years.
2007?
Several years ago. Yeah, probably. But it, I can't remember the exact year, but I remember the event, and it was not pretty that year.
I remember walking out of the house, and it almost smelt like you had cut it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, pretty much a disaster on that first cutting that time. But everything for a reason, and that's why farmers are tough. They get hit a little bit, but they keep going. So being Ag Week this week, it's a good time to say thank you to you farmers.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, absolutely. It is National Ag Week, so we do. And Adam and I, SS and I, we were at the regional FFA field day yesterday. We got to, of course, we helped with the tractor driving contest, but there's also, that was one of my favorite events whenever I was in high school, was going to the FFA, you know, regional field days and all the events like that. And
she just liked getting out of school.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. Anything but the classroom.
That's right. But it kind of, whenever you go into those, whenever we went, because we had that, it was at Western campus in Glasgow. This kind of takes you back to those, you know, those high school days where you're, you know, bringing, you know, wearing your FFA, you know, jacket and going and preparing and doing all the things. So it kind of makes you wonder where the time went, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, those are great events for young people. I think that's one of the best skills that FFA and 4-H and those youth programs do is teach kids how to get up in front of a group and talk. whether it's the speech contest, creed contest, parliamentary procedure. That skill will definitely help those young people throughout their life. And it's a skill that, unfortunately, a lot of kids are just kind of deathly afraid of getting up in front of a group. So I appreciate the folks that help guide them along. And FFA is definitely a great organization to help our kids.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. They, and I, honestly, I was the same way whenever I was in high school. I mean, even doing FFA and I did some speech projects and stuff like that. I was more on, you know, into the livestock judging and that kind of stuff, but I did do some speeches and the creed and all that parliamentary procedure and all that stuff. But even after like high school and into college and stuff, you know, I was still kind of, you know, shy and nervous about, you know, getting up in front of a classroom, unless it was like, you know, people that I, you know, knew really well. And even whenever I got into this job, I was still the same way as far as being a little bit timid and shy and stuff. But whenever you do this job, whenever you have to get up in front of people all the time, it just kind of, you know, you just kind of get into the habit of it, and that, you know, nervousness and stuff goes away. And like, whenever I was in high school, if you just said, this is the job I'm going to be doing, I'd be like, you lost your mind, because there's no way that I would get in front of a bunch of people, you know, and talk about something. But it's just kind of
same way.
Yeah. It's kind of crazy that, you know, how that kind of comes full circle, I guess.
Yeah. It gives you a good foundation to build on, doesn't it?
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Yep.
Heard a funny story. I don't know if it's true or not. Let's just say it is, but, talking about the creed, I've heard it told different times. Little fella got up and he's going to recite the creed like most freshmen have to do. And it starts off, you know, I believe in the future of farming. And he went, I believe I have forgot it.
That's funny.
And he sat down. So, yeah, those are the things, though. If you'll get up and try it a time or two, it gets easier. So.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's always a good fun events there, but it helps them pick up some communication skills as well.
Mm-hmm. Yep, absolutely.
I always enjoy, and you typically can find, if you get RFD TV, you can typically see it, but when they do the National FFA Convention, I always enjoy just watching opening procedures and opening ceremonies. And my boys are, of course, they're not really old enough to really appreciate it or understand it for that matter, but I enjoy listening to it. And I remember the first time I sat down with them, they said, "We don't understand this."
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It'll come in time, young grasshopper.
That's right. You're a good dad. You got to start somewhere.
Yeah. That's right.
I can still hear my advisor saying right now, here by the owl.
Oh yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So hope everybody has a good ag week, and thank you to all our farmers. And what else we want to talk about this morning, guys?
Well, I think Estes mentioned some stuff we've got coming up that the university is putting on. We've got some grazing schools coming up, some fencing schools. And those are always really good programs. We actually had a fencing school here in Allen County. I believe it was either last year or the year before last.
I believe it was the year I started.
Which so was 2 years ago.
2 years ago, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So we had a fencing school here in Allen County 2 years ago. And we had a really good crowd. It's a really informal program. We have the way that it works is it's a pretty much an all day event, and you spend half the day in the classroom, you know, going over fencing laws, fencing procedures, fencing tools, fencing, you know, pretty much everything that you can think of, you know, as far as fencing goes, and what you need to use and methods and that kind of stuff and ways to do it. And all the presenters are from, you know, the UK folks. And then we, you know, have some folks from different companies come in that UK uses to teach the program, and it's really good. The fencing laws section is really interesting, because that's kind of something that, you know, a lot of times landowners have disputes about, is, you know, fencing, you know, if you have a fence that's the property line or whatever, you know, there's laws and stuff that kind of go with that, as far as, you know, if you want to replace those, fix them, whatever. So that part's always very interesting. And like I say, then the afternoon session is actual hands-on putting up a fence. So like last year, we had a producer here in the county that allowed us to come to their place, and we actually built a fence for them that day. And it was pretty cool. You get to, if you've never, you know, fenced before, you definitely would learn a lot. And even if you're, you know, have a fencing business, you're still going to learn quite a bit, you know, different methods and stuff and different ways and techniques to do stuff. So it's a really good hands-on learning experience for folks. So if you are interested, you know, in something like that, I would definitely recommend it. SS, do you know which counties, where those locations are this year?
Okay. So on April 23rd, it's in Moorhead, Kentucky. And then April 25th is in Mayfield, Kentucky. So
east and west.
East and west. Moorhead is going to be at the Derrickson Ag Complex, which is on, I think that's the Moorhead State Farm, ain't it?
Maybe.
I believe. And then the West Kentucky and Mayfield is at the Graves County Extension Office, is where they're going to be at. So
yeah.
It's a $35 cost to register. And if you're interested in that, I guess the easiest way to get to it is to Google University of Kentucky Forges, and it's probably going to be the first link that pops up. It'll be UK Forges, and then there's an events tab on that page, and you click on that events tab, and you can see the various different things they have going on. If you scroll down a little bit, you'll see the fencing school there. So,
yeah. Like I said, but I definitely would recommend that. Yep.
I've never been to one, but I have heard people say that have went that said they thought they knew how to fence.
Yep.
Until they went to one of those. So
right. Yeah, I had the same. We had the same kind of, result. You know, whenever we had ours, people were like, "Man, I didn't. I thought I, you know, knew what I was doing, but apparently I've been doing it wrong for 10 years or whatever." But it's really interesting for sure. Mm-hmm.
The other thing that's coming up is going to be on April 30th and May 1st. It's actually at Princeton, Kentucky. It is the Kentucky Beginning Grazing School. So, again, I've never been to one of those. Obviously, I'm pretty new here, but I've heard they're really good. They go over a lot of rotational grazing scenarios. You actually, there is a hands-on portion of that as well, I believe, where you set up a rotational paddock.
Yep.
But yeah, I've heard they're really good as well.
I went to one of those whenever I first started. It was in Princeton as well, probably at the same place. But it was really good. It's kind of just similar to the fencing school. You do and I think the grazing school, is it more than one day? Is it 2 days?
Yes, it's 2 days.
It's a 2 day. Yeah. So like the first day, whenever I did it, the first day was like in class, like a classroom portion of it, where they taught you, you know, all about different forages, forage varieties and species, you know, that you can utilize for different, you know, scenarios or whatnot. Then utilizing your grazing, rotational grazing systems and different fencing, you know, supplies and stuff like that, you know, to use for your rotational grazing method. And then they give you like a scenario, and like, they had, whenever, like I said, whenever we did, we had like four different farm scenarios, and they give you, you get into like a group, and your group has to decide, like, with this farm, like how you would set it up for a rotational grazing system, and you know, what you would plant, all the things basically that you would have to, you know, decide as a farmer, you know, to make your production, you know, increase and do, you know, do it a better way than, you know, like a continuous grazing system or whatever. But yeah, that was really good. And then the second day, you actually go, it was at Princeton's farm. Then we went to, cause we, the UK Research Center at Princeton, of course they have, UK has beef cattle there. They have a beef facility and whatnot, but we actually went out and put up temporary fencing, you know, all that for rotational grazing. And like the day before, they had, you know, they would, you know, move some cattle into a paddock and then move them the next day. We'd move them, and then we would kind of see, you know, how much, you know, grazing took place, like in a 24-hour period, to kind of use that information to see, you know, how many paddocks you would need, or when, like, how quick you need to rotate and that kind of stuff. So it was really informational and hands-on. And like I said, that was a really good program too. And I would definitely recommend anybody that hasn't done that, if you're any kind of livestock producer, definitely would recommend going to that. I mean, I know it's a 2-day commitment, but it's definitely worth it, because you gain so much information and knowledge, you know, going to that.
Yeah, and really, 2 days, it's pretty cheap, $60 a participant, and that says it includes all materials, the grazing manual, a grazing stick, morning refreshments, and lunch both days.
Yeah.
So, and I know she's talking about the hands-on stuff. I was looking at the schedule here, and on the second day, it says that you're going to do a hands-on electric fencing, hands-on watering system. I will say that the comments I hear from most people around here is that there are limitations to rotational grazing, or to doing a good job with grazing, exactly, is water distribution.
Yep.
And I don't know, but I'd say these watering systems are probably going to be geared more toward the portable type watering systems versus the, you know, permanent systems. So
yeah, I think whenever we did it, basically it had set up just a water tub, you know, just like a regular livestock watering tub, and then they would have
that black poly pipe on top of the ground, quick couplers.
Yeah. They would just have pipe ran from, whether it's a spring or whether it was, you know, from, you know, county water. Most of the time, you know, if you're way back in the pasture, you don't have access to county water. But if you have access to a spring, then you have, you know, there are some ways that you can provide water for, you know, that kind of scenario.
So, yeah, that should be a good deal.
Yeah. Those are excellent programs. We used to do a lot of those are supplemented on the registration and the cost of all those through some ag development funds through Kentucky Forage and Grasslands Council, or things like that, helps put on some of these schools for grazing and for master cattlemen and all those things. So they try to keep the cost down, make it affordable so everybody can go. But the information is just fantastic. And so the Master Grazer program, it tried to model itself after Master Cowman. It got a little bit too lengthy. So I think the 2-day grazing school kind of took its place, and it's definitely been a big help to a lot of people. So hope you can take advantage of those sometime in your career. That's a good place to start if you're wanting to make more money, wanting to be more profitable, or increase your efficiency, whatever your goal is. That's the cheapest way to do it, is to get a good grazing system in place and let the cows do the work. And all those little tips and tricks really come in handy on the fencing. And then, so you can start with either one, but if you'll do those in some kind of combination, that will help you if you're interested in grazing. That's for anything, horses, goats and sheep, cattle. It all applies across all those species that will be grazing. So don't feel like you just have to be a beef producer to go. And then the other thing, every now and then they'll have an electric fencing school. Well, I went that one day. It was on Pin Oak Farm out in Versailles. Been 3 or 4 years ago. Dr. Toitz did it. I don't know that they've had one for a while, but that taught me a lot. Like you said, you think you know everything about fencing, but I thought I knew pretty good stuff on electric fencing, but didn't really know all I thought I did. So they help you avoid lots of problems with that. And it's all, you know, first morning session is just, and it's just totally concentrates on electric fence. So the first session is, first half of the day is classroom. The second half, we went out on the farm and we put up some temporary fence and troubleshot it and used the testers, and I just showed you lots of things that helps take some of that aggravation out of problems that come along with electric fence sometimes. Getting it grounded good, getting your surge protectors on, all those things that sometimes we don't think about that are necessary that will save you a lot of headache. So if that one ever comes around and you're in the grazing, try to make that one too. So Good info, guys.
Kevin, I get reminded quite a bit on how to fix electric fence. This morning I was out checking my cows, and I was driving alongside a two-strand high tensile fence, and I noticed some deer up in front of me that were running back toward the woods. And as I was driving along beside, literally about 6 foot from this fence, the top strand just goes flying by me. I had to fix fence before I come to work this morning. So.
Yeah. And of course, lightning is not our best friend when it comes to electric fencing. So there's different things that farmers have run in over the years that kind of turned them off on electric fence. But there's some ways to kind of keep those problems down a little bit, help you. And lots of new gadgets, new ways to use those in your system. So never hurts to go back and do a little bit of refresher.
Yeah, that electric fencing program sounds really good. I wish they'd offer that again. I'd like to attend that.
Yeah, that was a really nice day and learned a lot. Gallagher is kind of a partner that they use quite a bit. They're not the only ones that supply those things, but they did a great job putting it on.
So we can talk about this later on to remind everyone, but Ben, y'all brought that up. There is actually a electric fence troubleshooting school that's coming up in June.
It's probably very similar, if not the same thing that we went to there a few years ago. So talk about that one just a little bit.
It's in Butler County. Mr. Drake's down there. June 12th from 9 to 4. Hands-on electric fencing school covering installation and troubleshooting.
Well, that sounds like I needed to go to that then.
I forgot that came out on that. I'm glad you reminded us of that one. So if you can, whoever's listening, if you're out there and into grazing and want to do some electric fencing, time and money well spent if you can make that.
Yep. Looks like Gallagher is a partner on that one as well. So
yeah, they've been a long time partner and on all those types of systems. So they do a great job with it.
Yeah, Jeremy, the guy from Gallagher, he does an excellent job for
he
you
does.
Know, he does a really good job explaining, you know, how all the tools are used and all the different, you know, things that and methods that they use and whatnot. But he does an excellent job. So, I mean, you know, like you all said, you know, if you went to the fencing school plus the grazing school, if you had, you know, the opportunity to attend both of those this spring, you would really learn a lot, especially if you're a beginning farmer that, you know, is trying to get into it, you know, within this calendar year. I would definitely recommend going to both of those if possible, for sure. And like I said, it's cheap too. I mean, considering $35 and $60. I mean, that's not too bad.
Ag development funds really help keep the cost down. So we appreciate those. I don't know why this popped into my head. When I heard it, I didn't really think much about it and didn't really agree with it, to be honest with you. But I think it's kind of bears out the a lot of truth in it. We was one of these forage conferences meeting, some grazing school, something like that. They said, you know, livestock producers, we're not really livestock producers. You should be thinking of yourself first as a forage producer, because that's where you're gonna either make it or not make it. Usually, that's usually the difference. That has a direct impact on, you know, we like to talk about the pounds of beef we produce per acre, but that's directly related to the pounds of forage we produce per acre.
Yep.
So if you're into livestock, look at getting into some grazing. Not everybody's always wants to dive into the rotational grazing, but I think it'd be something good if you come, you know, if you be open to change, be open to learning new things, trying new things. May not be for everybody, but the more efficient we can get on our grazing systems and our forages and keeping that forage base going, it's going to flow right into the amount of livestock that we can sell.
Yep. And one thing about rotational grazing, and if you get the cow country news, There's lots of good articles in there. Chris Teutsch actually had an article in there this past month, and one thing he mentioned was that in a continuous grazing system, the cows are in charge. And he said in a rotational system, you are in charge. And so it takes me back, we were talking about the cost of these programs. If you can go to one of those schools, learn the tricks, learn about rotational grazing. I mean, that 100 whatever dollars we talked about, I think it was $60 for rotational or the grazing school, and maybe 35 for the fencing. But how much money is that gonna make you?
Yep.
Make you a lot of money.
Make you a lot of money. Yeah. And we mentioned something a little bit before we started that kind of falls right into it. That's kind of up and coming. And I think we'll talk about it more on a upcoming podcast is the bale grazing research that's being done and getting more popular. So it just continuing the education. You never quit learning. And it's always something new to kind of catch up on. But it's not definitely not cookie cutter, and there's different options for people, and that's just kind of the point I'm trying to make. Just educate yourself, keep up with the options, and see what works best for you.
Yeah, absolutely. We can talk about all these things all we want, and teach all these things, and everything that we talk about is not going to be a fit for every farm. So that's why you have to do your research, and go to these programs and go to these classes and learn different techniques and different things, so you can take a little bit of, information from this place and apply it to your farm, and then take a little bit of information from this and apply it. Because, like I say, everything we're talking about is not going to fit your farming operation. So you got to kind of pick and choose and fit, find what's best for you. And that's why we provide these programs to give you options, like Kevin said, give you options to choose from and to make the best decisions for your farming operation.
Absolutely, absolutely. Good info, gentlemen, on the forage is very, very timely.
What else is coming up? Spring of the year.
Y'all
Well,
want
sure.
to
Sure.
talk fruit trees and vegetable gardens just a little bit? We can, or we can move to something
Sure.
else.
I'm good with whatever. We can it is it is that time of year that as far as the vegetable gardens go, everybody's gonna start getting that. I've seen several gardens already plowed up
Yep.
and
Several
ready to go.
going. Yeah. Oh yeah, it's hopping. So what are some good UK resources that you all like to answer questions with or give out to our producers that might be wanting a little more information on? Let's just go with the backyard vegetable gardeners first, and we can talk commercial. But what's a good resource that we use for our backyard vegetable folks?
I may mess up the ID number, but is it ID 128? I believe it's called Home Gardening. I'm gonna mess the name up. Y'all help me out.
Home Vegetable Gardening in
Home
Kentucky, I
Vegetable.
believe. Yep.
Yep, that's right.
ID
Very useful.
128. Yep. And the ID 128, I give those out to homeowners and home gardeners, all throughout the spring and the fall too, because there is, three different growing seasons for, gardening in Kentucky. There's the spring, summer, and then there's a lot of winter production actually. If you like with all of your winter greens and all that stuff. And I've got a producer here in the county that does more, sells more inventory in the winter months than he does in the spring and the summer, together kind of. And that's just kind of their little niche there. But yeah, like I say, ID 128 is a really good resource. It tells you growing seasons, planting seasons, when you should seed different things. Tells you different diseases and things like that to look for with different crops. It's got all of your vegetable species kind of broken down into warm season, cool season, and when, like I said, when the planting dates are, when you should expect harvest dates for those as well. And even it's got information in there for different things like container gardenings, raised beds. It gives you some different information on like how to, what your dimensions should be, how many plants you can get into this dimension specific dimensions of a raised bed and things like that. So it's really good. It gives you a lot of information if you are a person that applies pesticides to keep diseases and pests away. It gives recommendations for what you should be spraying different times of the year, a spray schedules. So a lot of good information, and it doesn't go too in depth into the weeds where you're like looking at it cross-eyed. It's it's really easy to read and to comprehend for sure.
Does it have some organic options in there for folks that don't want to use pesticides?
It does. It has organic options in there as well. Yes.
I couldn't remember exactly, but I thought it did. And that's a common question too. You can just like Esther said, while I go back Googling, that's all on their websites. But if you want to find it quickly, I just Google that number ID 128 with UK or just home vegetable gardening in Kentucky. And it'll be right there. Sometimes if you'll put plus extension on the end of something, it'll tend to, UK's extension pubs will tend to float to the top. So something like that is very helpful. But we all have hard copies in our offices. So if you need something, a lot of folks like to have paper in their hands still. And so we can get you copies of all these things. But if you're somebody that's comfortable with looking at it online, it's there too. So what about our commercial folks? Commercial vegetable producers, what we got for those folks? I know y'all have a lot more of those in your counties than I do, but every county has a little bit of that.
Yeah, so the commercial production guide for Kentucky is ID 36, and this is for our producers that are kind of on a larger scale than just your average backyard, what you would grow for yourself and your family. These are for basically folks that are growing produce to sell for, to make a living or, a profit or whatever. But yeah, ID 36, we have, several Mennonite folks here in Allen County, and they call this their vegetable Bible. Cause it really is like, if you have a question about anything or have, whatever, it's got, you can find it in that manual. It's really good with spray recommendations and diseases, and what you should, when you should apply different things, at what stage, and then pretty much, like I said, all diseases for pretty much every produce or vegetable crop that you can grow in Kentucky. It has all those listed. It tells you, fertilization, when, what they kind of recommend for that, just on a generic basis. It has, like I said, pesticide, application, different, what you should apply for different diseases. It's pretty much, like I said, it's got everything. It's got conversion tables in it, that will help you with different conversions, on pesticides and different things like that. So, like I say, and I don't have one in front of me, but I'm just kind of going off memory here, because I look at that thing quite frequently, and I use it a ton, just with, helping our Mennonite folks and other folks too that, need help. But it's really good. Like I say, it's ID 36. And Kevin, you mentioned, about the homeowner guide, and looking stuff up online. What I would suggest, if you are someone that, does look stuff up online, definitely, look for stuff that is research based. I wouldn't, take any recommendations from anything that is not, research based. There's a lot of stuff out there on the internet that you can find, and you can find different answers for a lot of things. But if it's not research based or from a university, then I don't ever trust that information. There's lots of different gardening websites out there that have forums and all kinds of stuff like that. But if you really want information that is, research based and factual, make sure that you are looking up that stuff that is from a university or published from an extension service, because, like I said, that stuff's research based. It's not just somebody's opinion.
Yeah, absolutely. Yes, that's why I like putting whatever I'm searching for on this, on whether it's ag related. If at the end you'll just put a plus sign, and then put the word extension, it's going to include extension in that search. So it will bring up stuff from our partners across the country that have maybe some information that UK is not real strong on. There'll be some state, some extension service that'll have it. So good point. Don't go with, if you're looking for something research-based and unbiased, not trying to sell you a product and it's going to give you the truth based on the research, look for something from a university's extension service.
Yep, absolutely. Yep.
Good points.
What about our, let's go to the backyard fruit, and then I'm going to turn it over to you guys to talk about whatever you might want to wrap it up. But we get a lot of questions right now or backyard orchards. We'll maybe save the commercial part for you all to talk about, but just let's just talk for a minute about our backyard producers. What do y'all
sure.
recommend that they, how do they need to go about managing their fruit crops?
Sure. SS, I'll let you take this, and I've been talking too much.
So I'm going to tell you my go-to resource is, of course, I get a lot of questions on when to spray for what. And so the resource that I tend to lean to is called the Simplified Fungicide Guide for Backyard Fruit. They have them for stone fruits. They have them for apples. That is my go-to. I don't know about you all, but that's what I lean to on that.
I actually took all of those. I took this up on myself, by the way. I took all of those publications that you're talking about for all pretty much every fruit tree, you know, whether it's the peach, apple, stone, the cherry, all that stuff. I actually put all of those into one publication, one PDF document, and I made it all fancy looking and all whatever. But
show can, off.
Yeah, right.
Applebee style.
Yeah, yeah.
Fancy, but I can that.
I can hand that to folks, and it's got, you know, every, you know, every one of those in there. I also did that for. And that's for just the spray guide. There's also the same ones that you're talking about, Estes. There's diseases. There's a disease publication that goes with each one of those as well. And I did the same thing with the diseases. And I can actually send you all those if you want them. But anyway.
I appreciate that.
Yeah. Like I said, and it just has every one of them in it, you know, so you don't have to go and fumble through stuff to, you know, print out just this specific one or just that one or whatever. It's all in one place, and, you know, they can just find all the information there in one spot. So it made it easier for me because I'm like you all, I would get that question about, you know, spraying this and that. And they would come in and be like, well, I've got peaches, but I've also got, you know, cherries. And then the next person would be like, I've got apples, and then I've got, you know, pears. And so I just like, well, instead of me having to do this, print them all out, I'll just make it into one thing. And it's pretty helpful. But what I see with most, the most common thing I see with backyard fruit tree producers is lack of maintenance as far as pruning and just regular care for the trees. Mm-hmm. A lot of times folks will, you know, purchase a house that, or, you know, land that has, you know, an established orchard, you know, on it, you know, that may be several years old, and those trees have just been neglected. And so that's kind of what I see the main issue is, as far as the fruit trees go, is just they've not been cared for properly, whether it's, you know, that person's fault or not. But that's kind of what I see. They're way, you know, not pruned properly, not pruned often enough. And that's why they're not getting, you know, production from those. And then they also are not being, you know, sprayed properly or at all. Most of the time it's not at all with our back, you know, with the backyard stuff. And that's why, you know, they, you know, obviously come to us to get the, you know, that information that will help them, you know. But a lot of times, you know, if I see, depending on how bad it is, if there's a tree that's really been neglected and this, it's all out of shape, it's, you know, got, you know, a lot of issues, a lot of times, and, you know, it may not be what the person wants to hear, but a lot of times it's better to go ahead and plant a new one, try to care for that one as much as possible, and then let your, whenever your new one starts to grow and get big enough, you know, start taking care of it properly from the beginning. That way, you know, whenever you get 3 or 4 years in, you're actually getting some produce, you know, from the, you know, from the trees. So, that's kind of what I recommend. And then they can remove the old one that's not, you know, it's really causing more problems than it is doing anything, you know, anything good. But that's just kind of what I see a lot.
Yeah. Yep.
Sooner or later, they're all going to get pruned about 6 inches off the ground, but getting the longevity out of them is the key.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
But, yeah. One, y'all may have mentioned it while I had to step away for just a second. I couldn't remember the number of it, but a good little basic one to start with, and then get into more detail with some of those other fact sheets and things that you talked about that were, you know, specifically for fungicides or insect control. But that ID 21, disease and insect control programs for homegrown fruit, that's one I kind of go to and hand out, let them take it home with them, see where they're at, and if they need something else, that's a good place to start for a lot of folks that have the pesticide questions, which,
yeah,
that's insects, disease, weeds, mm-hmm, all those type things. So lots of good material out there. You just kind of, yep, got to identify what you're battling as far as the pest, and we can help you ID those things and then make a decision on what you want to attack it with. So
we're here to help.
Absolutely. Yep. Absolutely.
You guys take it and wrap us up whenever you get ready.
Yeah, I think we're pretty much run out of time here. We've been on for a good little bit. But yeah, like I said, you know, anything that we've talked about today, definitely reach out to any of your, you know, whether you're in our counties that we, you know, that we're from, or any other county in the state of Kentucky. There's a county in every, or there's a county office in every county, all 120 counties. There was an extension office. So if you have questions about anything, you can feel free to go to those folks and they can help you out, or you can contact us. We will definitely be glad to help you out on any of that kind of stuff. But like I say, we're running out of time here. I think I've enjoyed it. It's been a good conversation today, gentlemen.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah,
we've covered several acres.
Yeah.
Y'all put out some good info for our folks.
We did a lot of
mowing, bush hogging, or whatever you want.
Yeah, that's right.
We hit the high spots on lots of things. So
we won't have nothing to talk about next time.
Oh yeah. You guys do a great job for your folks, and
Next time we'll mention the Kentucky basketball team and see how far that's went.
next time we're gonna be podcasting from Rupp Arena at the national championship celebration when they come
back in and pull
the big bus into Rupp Arena. So
that's
all
right.
Good.
That's what we're hoping for.
That's right.
Well,
hang in there, guys. Yeah, y'all go ahead.
I was just going to say, Kevin, you mentioned it earlier, National Ag Week, but I just want to, and you've already brought it up, but I want to say thank you to the producers in our county, and to just farmers in general. We appreciate what you do, and we're here to support you.
Amen.
Absolutely.
To that.
Absolutely. We appreciate everybody listening in. We'll catch you again on the next episode.
Thank you for listening to today's show with Digging Up Ag. We hope you join us back next time as we discuss various agriculture topics. Until then, please write a review and subscribe to our show on the podcast platform of your choice. We'll see you next time.